At least four generations of my family have worked in the Gwydir lead mines. My great-grandfather, my grandfather were both miners. My dad was a miner in Willoughby Mine and worked just down the road from Park Mine. 100 years ago, almost everyone around here was involved in mining. Many combined mining with farming, working a small holding or helping on local farms to supplement the unreliable mining pay. In addition to the big mines such as Hamner, the ground is riddled with pits, shafts and trenches where groups of two or three men prospected, hoping to strike it rich. If we were lucky. Cobbler's Lode near Park Mine was named after the local cobblers who discovered the rich vein of lead and made a fortune. Discoveries like this raised hopes and encouraged further prospecting. But they were few and far between. The vein of ore in Gwydir was very thin and difficult to get to. The mine owners were desperate to attract investors and would go to great lengths to publicise the potential of the mines. Some were just carried away with the mining fever and lacked the experience to run the mine properly. Others were downright dishonest, making unrealistic claims about the probable rewards and conning money out to the investors. Hamner above you here is a typical example of the Victoria mines. Very showy buildings, but little in return. My dad didn't encourage me to go down the mines because the earnings were unsteady. Mines changed owners frequently and many went bankrupt, so miners were often laid off. However, the tough miners were always admired and the young lads around here were always keen to join their ranks. Park Mine was the last working mine in Gwydir, finally closing in the 1960s. Jobs at the mine were highly sought after, and there was a great atmosphere there. I was only there for a year in the end, but it was the best jobs I ever had. Most workers were local, so two Leyland Comet lorries used to pick us up from the bridge in Llanrwst to drive us up to the mine, while the bosses travelled up in the Land Rover with their own driver. The town really felt it when the mine closed. When he was 15 in 1956, my friend Albert started work on the Black Gang, loading the lead and zinc onto the lorries. He earned £7 a week and a monthly bonus. The gang were always black, hence their name. You didn't have masks and protective clothing in those days. When Albert turned 17, he went underground clearing the rubble from the rails after blasting, under the guidance of an experienced miner. Another youngster's job was collecting and refilling miners' tea flasks. They used to eat where they worked, and there wasn't a proper mess room underground. Youngsters hoped to work their way up the ranks and become a timberman or a driller. Everyone's ambition was to go underground, as the pay was better and you felt you'd become a real man. I was a welder, so worked throughout the mine, wherever I was needed. I was amazed how far the tunnels extended, longer stretch, nearly 2 miles, almost reaching the ugly house. It wasn't cold in the ground, and it stayed at a steady temperature throughout the year. It was wet, though, and you could hear constant drips of water. Experienced miners could read the rock. I'll never forget John Froggatt. He was a man of few words, but he had an unrivalled understanding of the rock. Once I was called to repair a pipe that had broken when a poorly set blast had shattered the rock. We'd just finished work repair when along came John Froggatt and immediately made us move our equipment away. "Pass me the bar," he said, and lightly touched the rock with the bar, making at least a ton of rock fall where we'd been working. Without realising, the rock was loose, but he could tell immediately. The drillers were the best paid miners, and they got a bonus up to £100 a month on top of their wages. That was big money in 1963. They often worked high up in the stope, a cabin made from mining, balancing on planks of wood supported by metal pegs drilled into the rock. Top driller Carlos Askew once fell 300 feet without breaking any bones, only losing two teeth. We were a musical bunch and loved to sing as we walked along the tunnel. The acoustics in the ground were superb. I remember one captain from South Wales saying, "I love to hear them singing at the end of the shift. It's bloody beautiful." At this small mine, young lads were employed on the surface operating the bottles that separated the ore from the rock. a bloodless sort of sloping conical table down which the crushed rock and the ore mix is slowly washed. You can still see the circular buddle pit where they worked. They walked up from Llanrwst or Betancourt each morning, and they worked outside all day, whatever the weather. The job was to keep up the supply of material on the buddle. When the buddle table was full, they had to shovel off the heading that separated ore from the top of the table and the tailings that was the waste rock from the bottom. They shoveled all day long. To make matters worse, the vein of lead that the miners were working with was very thin, so most of the material coming through the buddle was waste rock. The lads had to barrow all the waste away and tip it onto a spoil heap. The ore was shoveled into barrels, and a horse and cart called once or twice a week to take to the quay at Trevlew to go off to the smelters. A lot of work for very little ore. It must have been a back-breaking job. The pay was terrible. In 1860, young buddlers only earned 4 shillings a week, less than a third of the pay given to the experienced miners. Once they gained experience, they could begin working underground, which was every youngster's dream. It was not only better paid, but warmer in winter. Lead mining was a dangerous job, particularly in the 18th and the 19th century, before health and safety was really considered. In 1860, the government sent safety inspectors to look at the mine. They were impressed by the Gwydir miners, describing them as steady, honest and sober, even if they weren't so impressed with the working conditions. Cuffley Mine was a notorious place for the damps, one of the biggest underground dangers. As the miners used up the oxygen in the air, carbon dioxide was created. If there was no natural ventilation, it caused men to go red in the face, sweat, and fight for the breath. Water was another main problem in Cuffley. In the winter, it was a struggle to keep the mine open, battling with underground floods. However, they didn't look forward to the driest summer weather either, as the reservoir serving the mines dried up. There wasn't enough water to power the machinery. The mine could be forced to shut for weeks in both summer and winter. And it wasn't only the natural conditions that caused difficulties. Cuffley changed hands frequently and never made much money. If the owners went bankrupt again, the mine could be closed for months. When Cuffley shut down, the miners would try their luck on other mines and help out on local farms. Most also had a couple of acres for which to grow vegetables and keep a couple of pigs, so at least they didn't go hungry every time the mine shut.